I live in Washington.
You have music you can power up that somehow makes people sit down? What's music?
Testing, testing. Okay, we're ready to get started again.
Yeah, it was nice being down in Florida.
Okay, I think we're ready to get started again, if people can take seats.
Probably not.
One moment. I won't sleep. It isn't much. But I need. And the world is small for you. It's all a life to me. It's the last thing. With the turn to darken my soul, snapped out in red, I call my horizon, and I'd like to remind you of something small, about the rock in the pocket, it's not your fault.
Okay, time's up. Started.
Mike Nelson, please sit down.
We now start our second substantive session of the day. Linda Wilson has joined us. Welcome. Glad you could make it. Hope the other events went well this morning. Also, you'll see on page 375, starting at page 375 in the binders, there are some summaries of the suggestions that were received to date through the comments process on each of the substantive areas. We're already at work trying to incorporate what happened in the last session into that first one on membership, and no doubt we'll do the same with the second, which is on the structure and some of the nature of the supporting organizations and technical advice and support to the board. At this point, I would like to introduce and turn the podium over to Molly Schaefer-Van Howling. Molly is a fellow of the Berkman Center and also is now working with ICANN in some capacity. We have a tug of war going between us. Molly is in the middle, and now Molly is in the middle. So with that, I turn over the lavalier mic to Molly to proceed.
Thanks. And actually, if it's okay with her, I think we might get started by having Linda give a brief introduction, as the other board members did this morning, before we start on the substance of this session. And also, if our scribe could report to the scribe area.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here among you, eager to hear from you. I'm Linda Wilson, president of Radcliffe College, and the reasons that I am here are because someone asked me to take on this responsibility. Professor Landweber from the University of Wisconsin contacted me in July, told me about the challenges that were before us as this operation was to be transferred from the government to a nonprofit organization, and called on me to consider bringing the experience that I've had in helping to develop new nonprofit organizations, experience as vice president for research at the University of Michigan and similar positions at other institutions, and in running this small institution that I now lead, always innovative and always trying to be flexible and open to this enterprise. I'm looking forward to the opportunities to do that. I've found the discussions thus far stimulating, inspiring in many ways, as we try to get over the many complex challenges that face us, trying to look right now to how we can move quickly to function well and support the Internet, but at the same time look at with a very much longer horizon so that the choices and steps that we take now don't foreclose opportunity or access for the longer term. Thank you.
Thanks. Mike, why don't I give us a little outline of how we'll proceed in this session before we go on. This is a session on technical advice and unbiased expertise supporting organization structures. And if you'll turn to Esther Dyson's letter, which is just about the third page of your briefing book, you'll see how she sort of spelled out these substantive areas for us and listed a long list of questions that go along with this agenda item. And we found in the comments that we've solicited so far on the website that this is an area where there are a particularly large number of questions as well as suggestions about how... Okay. The timer isn't turned on for me. That's a relief. We've received a lot of questions as well as suggestions about how to move forward. Some of those are listed here. We'll display several of those on the board as we move on. And I think... Mike Roberts, who is going to lead off the board's participation in this session, will have some other questions to suggest to us. As we move on, we'll list those questions, list some of the board's thoughts on possible ways to move forward on those questions, and then solicit your suggestions on those items, other questions we've heard in the comments submitted, and your own questions and suggestions for answering those. So, Mike, why don't you get us started?
Thanks very much, Molly. I'd like to say that I'm delighted to have Molly as my assistant, and I have a first claim on her time, and Jonathan can have what's left over. We've had, over the break, some suggestions from several of you that we back up a bit on the question of the mission of ICON. And so we're going to spend just a couple of minutes because, among other things, it's apropos of the discussion about the support organizations, and we're going to put up for you on the screen, I hope, Molly, quickly, the part of the incorporation statement that contains the purposes of ICANN. This language is pretty straightforward and is, in fact, very close to the wording in the white paper as to what the U.S. government's expectations were of the nonprofit corporation that it proposed to be created. I think that those of you who participated in the processes over the summer are aware that John Postel, who was the guiding light of that, felt that it was essential to be faithful to the mandate in the white paper, since to the extent that a consensus existed, it was contained in that document. We are going to have opportunity for you to make comment about this, but I think in the interest of making this session on the SOs be productive for you, we ought to defer questions about this particular wording and the intent of the wording to the open session that's later this afternoon. I just, because a number of you said that we had jumped too far ahead too fast, we wanted to back up and give you a chance to look at this section. This, to the extent this isn't elegant press release language on mission, it hasn't been crafted in the usual management style. But it is nevertheless what there is of a mission statement for ICANN at this moment. Now let's go back to the regular format here. I want to give you a little bit of a preamble to trace the history of how we got to the SO structure, not because the board has an opinion based on the history in one direction or another, but because it's useful context for your own comments and suggestions in this session. After the Federal Networking Council decided to privatize NSFNet, which now is about 6 or 7 years ago, there remained the issue of what to do about those functions which the research agencies had supported as part of their R&D function in the growth of the original research and academic internet. And there was a general feeling that there needed to be an exit strategy for those functions because the internet was likely to grow rapidly. And at the time that these discussions were taking place, the internet had fewer than 10 million hosts in it. And we now, of course, have probably well over 50 million, and because of firewalls, we're not even quite sure how many there are anymore. But at any rate, the growth rate has exceeded the wildest expectations of everyone, and consequently, there's organizational scaling factors that have had to be dealt with. The government, of course, moves fairly slowly in trying to resolve untidy little problems like this. And so it really didn't get its act together until the summer of 1997, when there was an interagency working group formed, which Mr. Magaziner has chaired. And they asked the Commerce Department to publish the request for comments that led to the Green Paper. In the Green Paper, there was a general notion that the technical community that had been responsible for these three major areas, the addresses, the protocols, and what then was called the DNS area, not names as we call it today, that the technical community's input and control over that, nominal control of that, needed to be expanded to a broader base. And if you, after the comment period on the Green Paper came to a conclusion, one of the general summaries that the government took out of the Green Paper comment process was that the Green Paper still contemplated too much of a top-down and in many minds too much of a U.S.-centric approach to this, and consequently the White Paper is considerably more international in tone and also considerably more bottom-up. And the bottom-up nature of the White Paper, of course, has caused some difficulties over the summer in forming consensus because many people weren't used to a bottom-up as opposed to a top-down organizational response to these kind of challenges. Now, if you go back to version one of the bylaws, which is the document that was talked to at Reston in the first IFWP meeting, there's a tacit assumption there would be four user organizations. One of those was going to be users in industry, and then there were going to be addresses, protocols, and the DNS area. In the discussions in Reston and then subsequently at Geneva, which led to version 3, there was a general feeling that the bylaws did not yet capture a broad enough base of interests, and in particular that it didn't capture a sufficient role for the internet community at large. You think about the way the government was trying to look at this. It typically thought about users and so on in the consumer sense. And we had an objection this morning to thinking about users as only consumers, but that was nevertheless the mindset that was there. And so there was sort of an early notion about we will apportion this and they will get a quarter of it. Now after Geneva, two rounds of this. The structure had been adjusted so that the at-large, the public input to this corporation's board, would comprise a half of the activities of the support structure, and that the address protocols and names of communities would elect the other half. And that structure, that basic structure, has prevailed through versions 4, 5, and 6, which is where we are today. One of the interesting situations we find ourselves in now is that having abandoned early on in the summer and the spring the notion of a specific user organization, we now have circled back around, and the board has in effect indicated that it will go in the direction of where we were back in the spring, but with some uncertainty because the issues that were raised then were not resolved over the summer because they, in effect, were taken off the table. So as a result of that, we have the issue of the support organizations and their relationship to the board and also the role that they're supposed to play in the affairs of the corporation, and that's what this session's about, and I'm about to end my preamble and give you folks a chance to address that. I would point out that since this is a pretty complex area, and many of you are already engaged in organizing activities for the support organizations, I'm going to try to be responsive to concerns that are already directed at us about what's going to happen down the road here. But I thought it was useful for you to have the to get up to a context from which we could discuss that. And I'd also like to point out, Molly's going to put up there in a minute some text, but that the operative text about this is in your briefing book at page 43, if you care to reference the precise language about it. You want to put up the business about the six?
What we're putting up right now are the criteria that the board shall review when considering an application for recognition as a supporting organization. And we should scroll down maybe from what is really the preamble to the criteria. So a supporting organization application should include these elements. And perhaps it's easier for all of you who have briefing books to look at this on page 43.
I have met with at least 40 or 50 people in the past couple of weeks who have had a lot of questions about how to interpret this language, and also what are the board's intentions about how rapidly it will go forward with review of these proposals for recognition. The board hasn't taken any action on that, and I want to make one very important caveat, because it's been the subject of a lot of my face-to-face discussions with people, and I'm sure we want to give everybody a chance to be heard from this afternoon, and that is, you'll notice that this wording is not prescriptive, it's permissive. The assumption is that the communities of interest within the supporting organizations have a lot of good and creative and worthwhile ideas about how to organize themselves in a manner which meets these criteria. And in that sense, I see myself as the CEO, the board sees itself as the body which will recognize these as having a facilitating rather than a prescriptive role. If you want more guidance from us, we're certainly receptive to your telling us where you think this needs to be more structured, but we're not starting out from an assumption that it's up to us to be prescriptive about it. This really is trying to push the affairs of the corporation closer to the users and to hear and to allow you to have as much voice in your respective communities as you can in helping run ICANN and have it accomplish its agenda.
Thanks. Esther, did you want to add something to that introduction?
Yes, could you just say three words about what the supporting organizations do and what their powers and responsibilities are?
Going back to the history of this area, the original modus operandi for the Federal Networking Council was that this was an area of substantial complexity, and it required a lot of very talented, very on-point thinking to get things done right and to help the Internet grow and to be stable. That general frame of mind carried over into our organizing documents with the assumption that in these three areas, there were a sufficient level of professional technical expertise required that there should be very explicit mechanisms for bringing that knowledge through a structure and up to the board for action. And the bylaws provide that as a general rule, the board will take action in these areas only after advice from a supporting organization. There are a couple caveats to that. One is any recommendation made by a supporting organization is required to be vetted by the other two supporting organizations. And further, the board reserves to itself the right to act if it is confronted with a paralysis that's either accidental or intentional. So just to clear the air a little bit on some assertions that have been made as to whether the board will always or frequently or forever operate independently of the ESOs, they are an organic part of the body of ICANN. And the board will defer to advice from those bodies on their subject areas of expertise. On the other hand, it has the ultimate responsibility for doing the right thing. Esther also wanted me to say something about timing. I think that most of you are aware that the board's present intention is to have its first meeting at which it will do some of the real business of the corporation. The face-to-face policy business meeting is going to be in Asia, probably in late February. That meeting will be noticed and agendaed not later than the beginning of January, so everybody will have ample opportunity to see what we intend to take up, and specific agenda material will be publicly posted. So I've had a lot of questions from organizers of SOs about what do we have to do to get recognized at that March meeting. And again, I don't want to be overread and I don't want to sound prescriptive, but common sense suggests that we need to have well thought out, articulate, complete proposals with ample demonstration of the breadth and the depth of community support for those proposals in December. Now that is not conclusionary, that's among other things open for comment by those of you who are here today.
Thanks. I thought one way to get started with our two-way dialogue would be to review some of the questions that had been submitted already in our registration comment form. And one of those that was addressed by several commenters is the one that Mike has just started to address for us. The question of how does the board initiate policy should an SO not be willing to do so. I'm wondering if there's anyone in the audience who wants to expand on that question or add some subtleties that we should address, both with more feedback from the board perhaps and also for suggestions for addressing that question. Yes, Carl.
Okay, Carl Auerbach. With response to this question, the board, as was mentioned earlier, has a fiduciary duty towards the membership or towards whatever this internet community has. The SOs do not. If the board does not have a clear statement of authority to move in the total absence, not just the conflict of SO activity, then we have no means by which the interests of the internet community, and I use that word intentionally, can be served.
Thanks. Mike or other board members, do you care to explain what the position of the board might be in the absence? Mike, you'd mentioned paralysis among supporting organizations. Does that mean absence of action as well as a crunch between two different organizations?
Yeah. I want to give a general and a specific answer. One is there seems to be an assumption among some commentators that the board wouldn't do anything unless it came through some very highly structured route to the board. You know, that's not how we see our jobs. And therefore, if there's an area within our corporate purposes that you think something ought to be going on about, we're certainly anxious to hear from you. With specific reference to the point that Carl made, I think my general, and I'm not speaking for the board, I'm speaking as someone who's trying to facilitate a process, my observation of the people that are working in this area is that they have all kinds of work that they consider they want to do and get to us as fast as they can do it.
But what happens when an SO, whose primary responsibility in a particular area, refuses to act, and yet we have general consensus or a large body of belief in the internet community that the policy that is in place is bad? There's no way for the current board, under the current writings, to take initiative on its own to reverse that position.
There is. And
page 43, I think, is...
I've read it many times, and I still don't believe it's there, but I would certainly like to see clarifying language. If that's the intent, let's write clear English.
Okay. I mean, it is there. We will look at whether, in the fullness of time, we need to make it more clear.
The front mic, do you have another... expansion on this question?
Yeah, I have a direct suggestion that has to do with the role of the chief technology officer. You know, the bylaws provide for a chief technology officer. It seems to me that one of the roles of the chief technology officer should to be constantly abreast of the issues that the supporting organization, the technical issues that the supporting organizations are dealing with. My primary concern is that issues that are not really technical in nature, but have broad policy implications, there should be a way to spot those before the SOs spend a lot of time hashing them through or building protocols or whatever. You know, if there is a policy aspect. And despite what one of the other commentators said earlier, I see the chief role of the board is dealing with policy issues.
Thanks. Any other board members have any thoughts on that suggestion? I'd like to note that we have very helpfully moved into the structure of the outline that we have already by moving to suggestions as well as expansions on our first question. The back microphone, do you have another suggestion on this topic?
It pretty much feeds into what's been said already. I'll try to be quick. I'm Andy Orm from Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility. Despite the name, CPSR doesn't believe that computer professionals should make all the decisions that affect the public. And in the computer field, there's this idea of trying to separate policy from mechanism, which you can interpret in many different ways. But it could be the board or the membership or some wider community that sets policy, such as, I'll just pick one out that's on the top of everybody's mind. Say a policy that the domain name system should be set up so that it's very unlikely that any two organizations will vie over a single name. Now, if you adopt that as a policy, then you can go to an SO and say, make this work. You do the mechanism part of it. Now, if you want the policy to come from the supporting organizations, I think you have to redefine those, and they're no longer purely technical bodies. They'll have to incorporate people who are not purely technical experts.
The six criteria for selection include a requirement for open membership. And in addition to that, the revised bylaws provide that half of the board shall be composed of at-large members. If you believe there should be further adjustments, we'd certainly like to hear them.
I see that Carl has already complied with a rule I was about to announce, was that folks online who've made a comment on this subject might give an opportunity for people who have not yet commented on this subject to step up to the mic. And we're at the front mic.
Okay. It's a bit more general, the comment I have. Daniel Kahnberg, REP-NCC, European Address Registry. I'm a bit concerned about the tag this is getting as to the supporting organizations only being technical and concerned with the technology. I think the supporting organizations provide a bit, a large part of the legitimacy of ICANN, and they certainly will deal with policy issues. They deal with policy issues right now, at least the organizations that I, at least in the address area that I think will make up a big part of the support organization. So if people think, well, that this is just going to be about technology and protocol, I don't think that's right. I think they're going to make policy, and there will be open process for that. And it's too limiting to think of the supporting organization just as a technical advisory function to the board or to whoever, and to limit policy making to the ICANN board. I don't think that's the intention of the bylaws and of the whole structure.
So I think we can tie together the last two comments as both related to the extent to which SOs are, one, both only making technical decisions, and two, most appropriately, only occupied by people with a technical focus as opposed to more general user groups. We might even, if we get some other suggestions on this line, identify a question of to what extent is it only appropriate for people with a technical focus to be participating in the supporting organization.
And rather than answer that, I want to at least make one clarification that at least in the DNSO in particular, technical also means legal, not just
which
engineering.
Which I think perhaps raises the issue that we're raising,
yeah,
that
policy.
Even to the extent that the ambiguity between the technical and the legal or policy making. Why don't we scan back up to our original question and see if anyone in line in the mic wants to expand or continue to make suggestions about the role of the board versus the SO in initiating policies. Could we have hands raised maybe of the people at the mic who are interested in that question? And some polite shuffling around, maybe if we could manage that.
So it's how the board would be able to deal, my name is Dan Parisi, and the reason is about what the board's position would be in dealing with antitrust issues, basically like other companies or people setting up their own domain systems. Specifically, if you look at Netscape with their smart browsing, they're basically setting up their own like .Netscape directory service. And then say if Microsoft does the same thing, those two basically control 100%. So basically could put basically everything we're talking about, the North, and everything we're talking about, not amount to anything.
Okay, thanks. And I'd encourage you to expand on that maybe in writing. We have a comment box out front. And for others whose comments are not quite on topic for this too short session, to follow that advice as well. Amadeo, up at front, are you on this initiating policy issue as well?
Yeah, supporting organizations in relation with the board. First of all, let me say that I think you started by the most difficult question, probably the wrong way. What happens when the supporting organization is unable to make a recommendation? First, let's state the principles, as Daniel said before. 99% of the policy will come from the supporting organization that have to be open membership organizations, that is, that will be also open and legitimate, and that will bring to this system, you know, the part of the stability we all need, yeah? Especially the protocols and the numbers and the DNSO as well, with a quite different shape of things we're doing up to now. But what we expect, I'm afraid we all expect from all of you, is that you sanction what everybody agrees. First question, what happens if the board disagrees with one policy suggestion from a supporting organization? I submit that I'm not at all happy with saying that this can be decided by the majority of the board to refuse such a recommendation. And I would submit that a special qualified majority of, say, 14 members, 14 meaning all the at-large, one, president, and either, and at least representative for two of the three supporting organizations now have to seriously oppose that recommendation. I mean, I don't expect these stable coalitions, but just in case, yeah?
We're about ready to log this as a suggestion. If you want to wrap it up, we'll get it logged.
No, okay, this was the first part. The second part is what happens when there is no... sorry, Molly, you know. I like talking.
You have friends, though.
Well, what happens in case of inaction or conflict? Here, again...
Okay, so you've identified, again, the first question that we're on as the second element of your concern.
Now the second one on the second different scenarios. Not in the case that the board is against one of the propositions, but there is no proposition because there is conflict within the supporting organization is unable to make a policy recommendation while the board thinks it is important. Again, I expect this to be used through a... Let's say it's not only the board decision, it should go also through the membership of the supporting organizations, and again it would require a strong majority qualification for taking such a decision, not just the majority member, 10 members out of 19.
Interesting. So this sounds like a different view than we've heard before on the question of what happens when no policy comes up through the supporting organizations, instead of a view that the board needs clear authority to do something in that case, that the board needs to, should be, in fact, consulting in an iterative fashion. About that.
Everybody.
What's that?
They should be consulting everybody, it sounds like.
Any other board comments on that suggestion? Let's see. Who else do we have? The back microphone, I think, is still on this first subject.
John Turin, GTE. Specifically on the question of should the board initiate policy if the SOs don't act? Clearly, the board has certain legal responsibilities, and in the end, has something it has to adhere to, certain stewardship responsibilities, I might say. That means that ultimately they will have to reserve the right to act. I think the phrasing is probably sufficient. I don't actually like that, but I understand why it's there. The fact of the matter is that ICANN does enjoy a bit of legitimacy through the supporting organizations, which are not technical bodies, but our bodies focused on a particular topic, whether that be the protocol field, whether that be in the address field. These are existing organizations that balance technical issues, engineering issues, policy issues, and political issues. To the extent that a policy is necessary and it's not forthcoming from an SO, one would think that the ICANN would encourage the SO to work on a topic. Ultimately, if nothing comes from an SO after much encouragement, certainly the board has some responsibilities. But to the greatest extent possible, I think the policies have the greatest chance of actual adoption if they actually come up through an SO, and that reduces the chance of ICANN board making a policy which gets discarded by the community.
Interesting. So some more justification along the lines of the last suggestion, that when nothing comes up or when something not quite to the agreement of all the supporting organizations comes up, that the right response is to turn back to the supporting organizations, perhaps. At the front mic, are we still on this topic?
Close. Ken Stilson from MITRE Tech again. I wanted to, just as a quick footnote, point out that given the actual powers that it looks like the ICANN is going to have, what you're going to control, there are really two main issues that seem to drive the vast majority of the interest here: domain name conflict resolution policy and whether or not to make new GTLDs. There are a lot of people talking very grand policy, but in fact, if you took away those two things, this room would probably be empty. One of the things we need to figure out is whether it is, and I've heard contradiction about this just in the last three speakers, are the SOs technical and the board policy, or who is it that the people interested in those two issues and the other things that ICANN will actually have the power to control? Where do we go to address those issues? Do we address you, or do we address the DNSO? That should be resolved, because that really shifts the weight.
Excuse me. If I could just make a comment, I hope you folks are reading pages 43, 44, and 45. A lot of work went into the words, and certainly we could quarrel, as some do, with how those words would be interpreted, should be interpreted. But if you read page 43 under supporting organizations and section C, you'll see that the words policies and procedures, and as one example. And I just would encourage you to read this first, and then maybe some of the comments could be centered even on strengthening a point, as I think Ken wants to do, and or saying this is not what we want, and offer a constructive change.
Any other board member have a point on this slide? Scott, go ahead.
Hello, microphone. There we go, microphone. Why don't they just leave the microphones on? Anyway, I want to key off something that somebody said a little bit ago, which implied that if the board decides on a policy by whatever vague and to be determined method of doing so, they would go off, for example, and tell the protocol people, I think was the words, tell the protocol people what to do, which implies they're going to tell the protocol people what not to do. I wouldn't suggest that. These protocol people, including this guy right here, are headstrong folks who believe that they're in there for doing the right thing. The thing which got us the internet to where it is the lack of control over what we can do. We can experiment with anything we want to experiment with. If I want to exchange some new protocol with Mike Roberts, Mike and I can agree to do that. The board should be in no position to tell the protocol people, the technologists in the creating of technology, what they should not do.
Board have any feedback on their plans to the contrary or otherwise?
I don't think that was actually, at least it wasn't what we thought.
I'd like to note that another question that will be on the screen at some point during this discussion is the question of the board's relationship to existing organizations, including IETF. So if that's a topic that people at the mics are interested in moving, segueing to, then we can pull that up ASAP. Go ahead.
Yeah, my comment really moves toward that area because not being a participant with any of the supporting organizations and having read the bylaws, it looks to me like, you know, the supporting organizations are not supposed to encompass everyone with technical interests on the internet. But that's a much broader base. They're supporting organizations around specific tasks. And in that sense, I believe they should have a narrower focus than the existing organizations that have been taking on those roles as well as trying to do other things now. I mean, the internet's growing up a little bit. We need to plan for something that will work 2 years from now and not just how it's been. And I think it's very important that issues that are not really technical, that are primarily, that have strong policy implications, don't get buried in the SOs and then only arrive after the SOs have formed a block around we want to do this.
Just to clarify, the issue that we've now highlighted on the screen was one that was submitted by a commenter in advance of the meeting that seems like an appropriate one to move on to. At the back, Mike.
I want to go a lot farther back, unfortunately. When they changed in Geneva the balance of the user organization and the supporting organizations, it made it a little bit have an opportunity to be like the Italian legislature, where a very small coalitions can control the balance of things. And I actually disagree with expanding the user organizations to that extent and giving them that much vote, particularly if the board is going to follow that dictation of policy and procedures to the supporting organizations ab initio on its own, on petitions from people and on its own recognition without coming from the supporting organizations. I can't imagine that any of the supporting organizations would pay any attention to a board that would try to do any of those things. The board and the ICON exists to provide a service to those supporting organizations, to maintain numbers and names in a central repository. We have had experience with the top-down governments making treaties and deciding that they were going to use a particular set of protocols and that this is what needs to be implemented, and it didn't work. If the board wants people to directly petition the board for new things that the supporting organizations haven't given them, I think that you're in for a lot of work.
Could you, before you step down, identify yourself?
Oh, I'm Bill Simpson. I've been to the mic already before, so I didn't realize I needed to identify myself again.
And I remind the rest of you for the transcript and so forth. I wanted to just note, it seems like an irony of the last few comments, the possibility people are noting of attempts to create a broad-based organization with a membership resulting in, ironically, top-down management of existing organizations. Seems to be a thread through the last few comments. Yeah, Carl.
Okay, Carl Arvik again. Some specific suggestions. First, let's strike the use of the words bottom up. It is very ambiguous. I tend to use from the personal individual up. Some people think from corporations up. It's very ambiguous. I would like to say that the actual text of the bylaws talk about the proposal will be evaluated by the, one of the terms is, quote, good of the corporation. I would suggest that we probably ought to look broader than that, good of the Internet, when these proposals are being evaluated. Good of the corporation is not necessarily synonymous with what the corporation is supposed to be doing. Also, we made a specific proposal, I think it was orally, that there be language explicitly put in there that gives the board the explicit power to request SOs to come up with a policy, and then at the expiration of some reasonable period, that the board can then take action. I felt this was a reasonable compromise between giving the board unlimited power to initiate policy. It gives the SOs essentially the right of first refusal. There's also the question of why should an SO, which is coming up with policy, turn around, hand itself a copy of the policy and say, oh, what a nice policy, I approve, I vote for it. Why should SOs have a vote for their own policies? And finally, where is the technology in most of these areas? I would submit in most of these SOs, we're talking mostly about policy issues, and the board is mostly going to be dealing with policy decisions. We are dealing with a public utility here. We are not dealing with a toy anymore, which somebody in the IETF like me can go tweak a parameter and break something. We can't have this unconstrained playing anymore.
Thanks, Carl. Again, questioning the assumption that maybe someone might make that the supporting organizations are about purely technical issues, raising the ambiguity between the technical and the policy. Also some questions raised here sort of about the bylaw process and the selection of language that was made. Does anyone on the board want to address those issues?
Well, I think we're all listening with interest to exactly what this is all about. A bunch of legitimate questions and an attempt to create a system of checks and balances so that it doesn't go off the rails in one direction or the other. And as Carl said, in some sense, we are focused primarily on the good or the continued stable functioning of the Internet. And we're going to keep all this in mind. I think our language is actually fairly carefully crafted to provide some of those checks and balances.
I think the back mic has had a backlog, so let's stay with the back mic for a few more. Sorry.
Actually, I have a question based on what I think must be a misunderstanding of what the supporting organizations are and what they're supposed to be doing in terms of representing a bottom-up model. The existing organizations that I know of, as far as I can tell, are topically organized. They're organized around areas of specific interest, numbers, names, protocols. But when you really get to the bottom of the networks or to the leafs of the network or to the individual users, all these issues reconverge. They all have an impact on the people who are doing business or going about their lives using the network. By putting the sole source of policy determination in the hands of these several different, possibly numerous organizations, it seems like dilutes the ability of people who are in a position where they are all affected by all of these areas, and dilutes their ability to participate. I just don't understand how that represents bottom up. I'm confused.
Thanks.
That's a very legitimate question, and the board's discussed that. Mandate for an SO to demonstrate open membership in its recognition proposal is specifically related to that concern.
Yes, but that means at least three different organizations that you'd have to participate in to have any real impact.
I certainly understand that, but I sincerely hope that people are not underrating the depth of the issues that these organizations are required to undertake, and the primary requirement of this organization to ensure stability of the Internet.
So let's move to the front mic.
Yeah, Don Talaj from Network Solutions. I just wanted to take up the issue again of the action of the board in lieu of action from the supporting organization. I think it's important to focus on that for a moment. My concerns are that it is quite likely that if the supporting organization does not act on an issue, and it is a fully open organization, as Mike insists, it's conceivable that there isn't a consensus for that, or even enough of a consensus that is an important issue. If, in fact, the board does take action on an issue, that there isn't a strong consensus, and it flows that action down to the service providers that are required to implement that action, registries, IP, or registries, domain name, then is it prepared to indemnify those organizations from the suits that will likely appear? That's a very important issue operationally. You're much more protected when you're operating under a very strong consensus and a mandate from the community at large than when you're operating under a minority consensus and a board action. And I think whether you have contracts with your service providers or whether you do not have contracts with your service providers, the issue of liability, which I can speak to very strongly, 44 cases, okay, is something you really seriously need to consider. That's what, it goes back to my earlier comment this morning. This is not a governance body. This is a body that gets its legitimacy from a strong consensus from the people. Okay, and as a consequence, action without that consensus leaves you vulnerable and leaves the purveyors of that action, okay, equally vulnerable.
I think you just answered your own question. That's part of what we have to consider so that we don't do crazy things.
Don, if I could ask you a question. I thought that was well said and good advice. But if you, again, going back to what's at least here, would you take out any language that had the ability of the board to act, or as it says here, to act on matters that the board finds are necessary or appropriate to further the purposes of the corporation? Is that what's bothering you about?
No. Joe will tell you he and I spent many hours crafting, I think, that compromise language. My understanding, I mean, obviously I sit on boards, I understand the way corporations, profit and nonprofit, have to act. You have to, as the board, obviously have to do what's necessary for the good of the corporation and for your mission.
Mm-hmm.
However, to enact a policy change, okay, which may not be an emergency or required, without a mandate from the community, is where you cross the line, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Yes, I think you've made a very good point there. I'd also draw attention to people that in version 4 of the bylaws revision, which was late August, that there was new language inserted having to do with the obligation to offer a reconsideration of a decision of the board on to any party feeling that they are adversely affected by that decision. And presumably some of the comments here about the worst case scenarios, that the parties who felt that they had been damaged by a decision would certainly make use of the reconsideration provisions of the bylaws.
We've been reminded by our internet observers that all of us, including the board members, actually should identify ourselves before speaking. I would like to freeze the microphone lines right now. I don't think we'll be necessarily out of time with these folks, but I would like to lay out for you the other questions that we had submitted after we get through these comments to make sure that we don't have other stuff that we want to talk about on those topics before we run out of time. The back microphone, please.
Patrick Greenwell, ISPC. My comments dovetail into what Don was saying regarding bottom-up and consensus of the supporting organizations in creating policies and so forth. Therefore, with some consternation, I noticed in the most recent version of the bylaws that were submitted to NTIA that there was a removal of the SOs as a primary source of funding, and there was also the deletion of their ability to propose fees and charges. So I was wondering if the board could tell me what financial model they're basing the business on and who's going to be the source of funding for this organization.
Yeah, I'll respond to that. In the earlier version, some people drew the conclusion that the company would be solely at the mercy of the SOs for its financial support. That was a misimpression, and we wanted to correct that, and that's why we changed the wording. Obviously, the community is going to financially support the company if it's going to be successful, and we'll work with you to choose the specific mechanisms.
However, in the current language, there's no method of doing so. There's no mention of the supporting organizations having the ability to propose fees and charges that they're going to be subject to. Do you see that as an issue?
There's a whole long list of issues associated with this. I'm in receipt of at least a dozen different notions about how to do that, and since nobody's had a chance to think about that or refine any of them, I don't think it's appropriate to comment this afternoon on which direction we might go.
Any other board members have anything to add on that point? Virginia?
If we're not here to comment on anything, then what's the point of being here?
We're here to listen to your comments.
I'm here to listen to you.
But you see, again, we as a board haven't decided these things. We're not stupid. We understand that we're going to need to get money somehow. And so we're thinking about it, and at some point we're going to have a board meeting and decide. But before we do that, we would be interested to hear your comments.
Well, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on the matter, so I can feel comfortable with the current board as it's constituted, because I don't know who you folks are, quite frankly. I mean, you seem like a great bunch of people. You have good credentials, but I don't know who you guys are, and you're asking us to trust you.
Well. Okay, I personally, I think we should just charge everybody in this room $5,000, and it would be a good start.
The front mic, go ahead.
Could I make a comment, though?
Yeah, sure. You can make a serious comment.
Just George can write us again. At the bottom of 44 are the six criteria for... The test, to be recognized as a supporting organization. One of them has to do with membership or participation criteria. I'm going to make a big assumption here that in there would be some method of that could apply to the financing aspects. But I agree with everyone else. We have not really dealt with that.
Actually, the Roman numeral 6, it's Frank Fitzsimmons, Roman numeral 6 under that section actually does provide for one of the requirements is for providing funding for the corporation. So I think it is covered. The exact mechanisms and charging and fee structures is not covered. As to Esther's point, that needs to be discussed, but there is something in the bylaws that addresses that.
Right. I need new glasses.
Thanks. Anything else from the board? Let's have the front mic.
Hi, Joseph Alada from the United States Council for International Business, which is also the American affiliate for the International Chamber of Commerce, which has representation in over 130 countries. I wanted to make two clarifications. One was that we do see the need for expertise beyond technical expertise in terms of technical, as I guess the engineering definition of technical, especially since a lot of issues, especially in the DNSO, will deal with broad commercial.
Closer to the mic, please.
Sorry.
Thanks.
We'll deal with a lot of broad commercial and legal issues as well. We also think that in the creation of a DNSO, it has to be done by a broad international community, which would include users, subscribers, registries, registrars, ISPs, consumers, businesses. It's a broad panoply as dictated by both the white paper and the actual bylaws as they came out. And through the ICC, we've been doing outreach to business organizations so that we can more coherently participate within this creation process. One of the things we're concerned about is we understand that there needs to be a time frame, and we understand that, you know, there has to be a point in time at which you say stop, and I see mine is coming up. We're concerned that December 15th may be an overly ambitious time frame, and we'd just like to put that on the record.
Thank you. Let me assure you the board is the last thing the board's going to do is set arbitrary deadlines, but we certainly are interested in getting in moving the agenda forward in a timely way.
Just in terms of a quick response, based on, I mean, even the number of issues that are brought up here, even when you have three pages of criteria, you could say spelled out, indicate that these are issues that have substantial depth to them and consensus on them will be hard to reach in a short time.
The back mic, and then I think we're going to briefly take time to go through the other questions that will maybe prompt some thinking on them from the other folks at the mic. Go ahead.
This is Jay Halbin. I've already suggested I feel that the board is like a private sector coup and the government should be involved, but the question on the table is where did the support organizations fit in? And I think that's a very important question. Where did they come from? They certainly didn't come from the library users or from the people who are on medical chat groups or the rest. And so the question that the board should answer is why hasn't there been a user SO created? What is the veto that's already been stated by the USENET and Internet community over this process? And if there's any chance of involving the Internet and using the functions and the forms of the Internet to understand how to create new types of organizations that, in fact, include those people.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I'd just comment that a user SO was not supported at the IFWP meetings, and so it's disappeared off the radar screens. It's clearly back on the radar screen now.
No, but I'm suggesting that there's a veto that's been exercised by the users of the Internet because they don't feel that this process has anything to do with them. This is stakeholders. People have economic and financial stake, but it's our lifestyle that we have at stake, and that's different from the financial and economic stakes that everybody in the room seems to have.
Thanks. A point of order that's been brought to my attention, at least some of you are missing some key pages from the bylaws in your briefing book. I understand page 134, which includes the full text of the bylaws, as well as the previous version of the bylaws, the BWG and ORSC proposals. So you do have a full version, and page 134 has a key section on fiscal matters. So we apologize for the oversight. We will correct this on our online version of the briefing book if you want to correct your briefing books when you get home. And again, it is in there in the comparison version. Why don't we run through, before we get to the end of our time, the other questions that were identified in the online comments submitted, in case any of you at the mic or others have suggestions on ways of resolving these questions. So is that the first one, Ben, that hasn't been? So the pace of review we've touched on. We've touched very much on initiating policy. A definitive answer on the role of the Names Council. There are a couple of questions submitted about whether the Names Council was a large body with an open membership or a small elected top tier of a larger body. Does anyone on the board have a clarification for that or an amplification of that question?
We hope the Names community is wrestling hard with the issue, and we're anxious to hear from them.
And then, Ben, why don't we just go ahead and continue scanning down. We had a question about the funding process, which we have touched on. And we've touched on the question of the relationship of ICANN to existing organizations.
We would be interested in hearing suggestions on how to fund ourselves.
Ben, if you can quickly scroll down and see if there's anything. Qualifications for SOs, we've gone over the bylaw provisions there. We've had several comments on the technical or non-technical nature of the SOs and the openness requirement in the bylaws. We raised a question of antitrust issues, and I think actually the rest of the questions on there were raised today. So let's move back to the mics for our last few minutes. Go ahead at the front mic.
All right. I'm assuming that it's an assumption, it's not stated in the bylaws, but a tacit assumption by the board of directors of the ICANN, that the membership, the future membership of ICANN will not be identical with the memberships of the supporting organizations. Is that correct?
Most likely.
That is to say, there will be a broad membership, a large and broad membership of the ICANN, which will elect or select in some way the board of directors, but that the memberships of the supporting organizations will be specific memberships of those organizations. Is that correct?
It is likely to turn out to be correct, but one of the criteria for the SOs is that their membership be open as well.
Well, it seems to me that it's essential to have some sort of balance of power. I mean, a number of people have brought up this question of the relationship between the board of directors and the supporting organizations. If in the end the memberships become identical, and if indeed the board of directors is made up of, even if it were only 50% of people who were the direct representatives of the three supporting organizations, there is no longer any balance of power. If the memberships are almost the same, the memberships of the organization as a whole and the supporting organizations, those two memberships, if they're identical or almost the same, and if the board of directors are chosen by the supporting organizations, basically you have no longer two separate bodies, a board of directors and supporting organizations. You see what I'm getting at? I mean, Carl Auerbach, there's been a controversy that's been going on. People have pointed out very clearly and insisted, Carl Auerbach and many other people, that it doesn't seem theoretically logical that the board of directors, even 50% of it, will be made up of people designated in one way or another by the supporting organizations. It needs to be a separate body.
Okay, I think the question is clearly on the table to the board. Does anyone care to address it, or it's a concern, I guess, that's been raised?
Well, I'll take a stab.
Excuse me. Beg your pardon for interrupting. Could Linda Wilson respond? I'd be particularly interested to hear her answer, and anyone else who wanted to, but I'm very interested to hear her.
I'm not prepared to answer that at this stage of the game because we're still very much listening and trying to search for the answers to this. It's a conundrum that we do have to deal with. We are very interested in being responsive from now and on into the future and to build in the balances of power, but we're also trying to make sure that every piece of this is very open.
You folks have, George Conratus again, have been searching for our opinions. I think if you read the tests for the supporting organizations, well, let me back up a paragraph. I think if you reread the mission of ICANN, which really deals with addresses, domain names, and protocols, and then think about the supporting organizations that each deal with those, and read their membership criteria and then the acceptance of that by the ICANN board, and add to that the fact that the other half of the board is at large, I'm not troubled by that which the troubles that you foresee. I mean, as a generalization, I'm not troubled by that construct.
Well, at large is not a defined membership.
I agree.
There's no built-in safeguard there.
Well, we spent a lot of time on that this morning, and I agree that there's a lot to be debated about how the at-large gets elected and who they are, et cetera. But, I mean, as a general construct, the ICANN has a functional mission for addresses, domain names, and protocol, policy, procedures, and the idea that the supporting organizations, for each of those, would be made up of experts in those areas and therefore elect people to that board, as long as those processes are open and fair, that's not troublesome to me. And then I agree on the at-large, we have a lot of discussion about how do we really get nine representative at-large geographically and certainly user based in there in some proportion.
Excuse me, but you don't see any conflict, any illogicality about having the same people nominated as the leaders of supporting organizations and board members, the same individuals?
If they're elected, no, I don't.
I do want to remind everyone that we're unfortunately about out of time and have another subject matter item for the afternoon. So if there's something else from the board, then we can
And talk. Actually, this is obviously a discussion that the board has had even in it, a lot in its short existence. And I think the things we come to rely on are three things, the checks and balances that I think we just discussed in the last 45 minutes between the board and the SOs, in that if there is inaction or paralysis in the SO, the board can, in fact, initiate action. Now, how realistic that is more than a few times in existence, it can be called into question, but the check and balance still exists. And I think the thing that makes that complete is the open process. And it's the postings, it's the communication, and it's meetings such as this, and the posting and commentary period. So I think we're depending on those three things to work in concert in everyone's best interest.
We're going to have to freeze them.
Can I
oh, sorry, go
ahead. Add one question to this to you here in the room? Is there a hidden time bomb in the development of the Internet? If elected board members who are serving the corporation on its mission to benefit the whole Internet society cannot be trusted to work on the interest of the corporation and the society, and it is difficult that the selection process is from the specialist communities, the community at large, I get a feeling, but maybe you can answer it for me, that there is a sort of hidden time bomb. There are fundamental differences of opinion within the Internet community. If that's so, we will have a big problem in the near future. Thank you.
Is that it from the board? Okay, the mics are now frozen, and let's try to keep it to 20 seconds for the last few comments.
That's not quite fair.
Talk about fairness.
Yeah, that it should be after the.
Fairness here. He just got 3 minutes.
Well, I thought I was next. And maybe we'll stick to a minute. But we do want to save some time for our final comment. Go ahead. Everyone at the mic will have a chance to go. At the back.
Am I next? Okay. Just quickly about that, I thought there is a real hidden problem, and that is that the Internet is a network of networks, which can include a commerce net, but there's a lot of pressure from very big parties with a lot of power to make the Internet into a commerce net, which will get rid of the Internet. So I think that's the fundamental contradiction you're dealing with. That is the time bomb. And this, I think all of this is part of that effort, that this private corporation is some of the pressure towards forming that commerce net to replace the Internet. Secondly, the funding, very important. The Office of Inspector General talked about giving 4.3 billion IP numbers, domain name system, root service system, protocol control to a private corporation. What kind of incredible fund money that represents in somebody's hands. Talking about funding and us having to pay, you're getting the assets that are our cooperative assets. Now, that somehow that you talk about, you know, us paying when you claim you don't realize what for, now there's $2 billion allocated, $50
okay,
a year.
Okay, I think that's now
is $100 billion alone.
So if you could wrap
and
up
so,
the last
I
few.
Thought the other issue is policy. I didn't think the IETF was supposed to be making policy. I that's what I've read on the IETF board. Maybe somebody should clarify. Somehow the whole effort has been to not do policy and to keep that open, and that's changing now.
Thanks. We've got a lot of issues on the table, and I remind all of you again that we're soliciting written comments and also comments on the website for those of you who have more to say. Go ahead.
I'm Jim Dixon. I'm a director of EuroISPA and also the UK Internet Service Providers Association. I'm answering the question on the hidden time bomb for the Internet. There is no hidden time bomb for the Internet. The people who actually provide operational stability for the Internet are the ISPs and the registries. And for us, We don't care how long this process takes, to be frank. I mean, the ISPs. The longer it takes, the more trust we will have in this board. If we're ever going to have trust in this board, it's not now. It may be someday. I would slow this process down rather than try to speed it up. This board is already proceeding too fast. There is no time bomb.
First of all, I probably should fill people in on why we're laughing around
here.
For
the tape, say who you are.
Okay. People are just joking back here. We're handing out a basket and putting in funds for the ICANN. Two points, specific points. One, I'd like to see a specific language giving the board the ability to review proposals from supporting organizations on the merits of those proposals, not just by themselves. Also, I'd like to have a specific statement which no funds will be received whatsoever from a supporting organization. The entity should receive its funds via licensing these assets to the actual operational company.
Thanks. And I don't know if Mike, who started us off, or any of the other members have any summation before we move on.
Well, I think this is
I made a comment that I thought we had to look at what was the significance of the veto of not having a support organization. Instead, my comment went to what about a user organization. I don't think that that's a correct characterization of my presentation.
So noted.
Well, we're over time, and I personally found this very useful, and we'll crank it into our deliberations on this and move along.
Good. Let's try to see everyone back in 10 minutes, and maybe we'll achieve 15. Good.
Yeah. Hi, Don. How are you? Yeah, sure. I do. No, I do. I saw you last night. I was just trapped by the opportunity. I thought that she made a lot of sense, but I thought she was so overly concerned.
Thank you. In the on Sunday, no traffic on the avenue. The light is pale and thin, like you. Could make you
when red flares of a dawn, it seems to see itself again. Small black bag and a big black coat. I'd have you make a house call to the woman you could lay your diagnostic hand upon her belly and her throat. If you were in my movie, you could be the detective. You could sit behind the desk with a question on your lips, examine the motive, investigate the scene. In the ever-present danger, keep the holster at your hip. If you were in my movie. If you were in my movie, you could be the priest. Long black frock, white collar at the neck. You could come to the confession. You could give a girl a thrill. You could save her from her passion. Keep her body in check. Double-breasted, tin-sight man with a cigarette going down the alley. The double-crossing blonde explaining
to you. Castrating.
If you were in my movie. 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 If you were in my movie.
Thank you.
a child, you see the stars and wonder why. Can't seem to move, hand on the doorknob, feel like a thing. One foot on the sidewalk, too much to prove. You learn how, you learn how, you learn how. Mother, the doctor knows something is wrong, 'cause my body has strange information. He's looked in my eyes and knows I'm not a child, but he doesn't dare ask the right question. Mother, my friends are no longer my friends, and the games we once played have no meaning. Gone serious and shy, and they can't figure why, so they've left me to my own daydreaming. What price to pay for bad wisdom? What price to pay for bad wisdom? Too young to know, too much too soon, bad wisdom.
Folks, some of you need to leave at 4, so out of courtesy to those who need to leave at 4, would everybody please sit down? Bill Simpson, would you please sit down? Okay, thank you. Let's see.
We are reconvening.
We're almost not going to meet our quorum.
Hello, 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 hello. Can we get this meeting started? Could we ask the people in the hallway to come in? Scott Bradner. Bradner. Is that Bradner? No, it's not. It's Dixon. Dixon. Hey, Jim Dixon.
Rhonda Halvin, please sit down. Tamar Frankel, take your seat. Okay.
We now begin our last, is this on?
The final assault.
We now begin our final session of the day. Conflicts of interest, transparency, procedural issues. I know we have to have a hard close at 4 o'clock, so people wanting to get out to Logan can do so. I understand the board, or as many people as possible, will stick around afterwards, though, to mingle and talk. As you can see, we're evolving our own means of integrating the technology and having the format go as we go through the day. Hopefully it's getting better rather than worse. And with that, I would like to introduce my colleague, partner in all Berkman Center activities, Charles Nesson, who will lead us in our last session.
Thank you, John.
The subject is transparency. My sense is that we would all like to hear from the board, and I thought that a subject as conceptual as transparency might be an ideal one to explore with them. So, transparency is the subject. It's a big subject. It starts with Socrates and runs through Montaigne to Nietzsche and Foucault and right to you, right to you. What does it mean to you? Linda Wilson, transparency. What does it mean to you?
It means that as we are any board...
Can we get the mic up? She's pretty close.
I'm pretty close.
Test 1-2, test 1-2. No, she hasn't got a mic.
The transparency, it seems to me, is fundamentally important to this this being a globally public utility, and so any organization that tends to try to support it, intends to try to support it, has got to be able to function in a way that is pretty open. My biggest concern about this is how to be extremely open and still function in a timely way, because the internet, by its very nature, functions with a very high speed of rapidity. These are the kinds of things that have been on our minds as we've been trying to put the bylaws together, and certainly will always be before us.
George Conrades, what would be a measure of openness? How would one, if one were to say, now I want to measure the transparency of ICANN, what would be the measures?
Well, first of all, I think that's a great question. We haven't spoken, as you'll read to the bylaws, we haven't spoken much to measurement in here. But certainly you could, just to take one section, Section 3, Notice and Comment Provisions, there could be measures around the provisions that we have here for notice and comment, timely publication of the minutes, advance notice of the meetings, et cetera, et cetera, such that were we to fall behind, I think we committed to 21 days, as I remember, for getting out the minutes. If we fell behind 21 days, there would be a measurement, and that may seem quite minor, but it seems to me that we could develop a measurement scheme around the provisions that we've stated here for transparency, and I notice that we really don't have measurements in here.
Well, perhaps before we get to measuring, we need to know more what we're measuring. So, like Frank Fitzsimmons, at a conceptual level, when you're thinking yourself, imagining, you know, 3 years out, 5 years out, have we succeeded in establishing this as a transparent enterprise? Just in your head, conceptually, what would be the elements of it for you?
Well, I think being a marketer, my first instinct is we're going to do a survey, and then we're going to do a survey to clarify the questions and answers of that survey. But I think
already a pretty good answer.
And so, actually, and I think obviously there's been people looking for mechanisms to get that input back and to measure that input. So, sometime in our lifetimes, I believe that will be possible to measure that satisfaction with people and process. I do think the fundamental things underneath transparency, or probably what I would call in this case the trust model, I mean, it is the bylaws and it is the structure we're talking about today. It is the actual checks and balances between the board and the SOs and the at-large membership. It is the processes, the processes that George alluded to in terms of posting for comment. I don't know how you measure people's satisfaction with being heard. And being heard doesn't necessarily mean that everything you said was adopted. That's not being heard. Being heard is that somebody listened, considered, was educated on the topic, and saw your point of view, and actually in some cases, like any good lawyer, could argue your point of view. And I think the third thing that comes into transparency or trust is actually the people. And we talked a lot about nobody trusts the board. And my trust model quite frankly, is that trust is a factor or a function of experience over time. And it's obviously been a very short time that we've been in front of this room. So trust will not come quickly, and trust also doesn't go away quickly if there's one bad experience. So it's those are the structures. I think it's the structure, the processes, and the people.
You think trust doesn't go away quickly?
I think if you've had good experience with people or an entity or an organization or a process for a long period of time and you have one bad experience, I don't think that overcomes a history of good trust and a feeling of trust. I don't think it goes away quickly after a period of good experience.
It's the second one that gets you.
Yes.
One you'll give them a chance on because you trust them. But the second time you screw me, you're out the door.
Maybe the third.
Hans, do you see transparency and openness as having a spiritual quality to it?
Well, thank you very much for that question. Maybe there is. I believe that transparency is also something like the fairy tale by Andersen, The New Clothes of the Emperor. Those new clothes are very transparent. And looking with European eyes to the United States, I believe that the quest for transparency in the governing process maybe can be commented upon from a European point of view. I believe that transparency has to do with being open and clear and very rational, maybe Cartesian, in your dealings with the business, the subjects you're dealing with, and that at the end you have succeeded, and I believe this board may have succeeded in the situation where after a year at the 30th of September we have accomplished our task and you're sorry to see us go.
It's going to be a problem, isn't it? We're going to have come to love you. And when you finally do adopt the method for replacing yourself and all resign en masse, we'll cry.
Bye-bye, old white guys.
You do have a certain uniform complexion as I look at you there. Esther, do you think openness and transparency has a rhetorical character?
Well, I
asked that because
yeah.
I noticed at the beginning of the meeting, well, perhaps I should ask this as a question instead. Greg, what would you pick out in this meeting as having been evidence of transparency and openness? What's happened here?
Well, I think we've seen people speak their minds, they express their doubts, and that's been accepted as the normal mode of operation, I think, in a meeting like this. And we at the board have listened. If we haven't responded as much as people would like, it's because perhaps some of us don't have views on these issues. Some of us only come to this subject very recently. And on the other hand, we may have views, but we want to keep an open mind and listen to other points of view. I think openness, transparency comes about through, not by accident, by working on it, that you need to put in place a process which enables people to become involved, to be observant, be able to observe what's going on, not only to be visible, but transparent means you can see through it. And that therefore the underlying reasons for what's going on is also evident and available for people to see.
Exactly. And it was way back at the opening, I forget exactly what it was, but you said something, and then you said why you said it in rhetorical terms. And I was just struck by it. This person has I want to ask you, in what sense, what does transparent mean to you?
Well, I want to go back again to my favorite topic, which is Russia.
And
say it again.
I want to go back to my favorite topic, which is Russia.
Russia.
It is a place that gave me a horror of closedness, secrecy, power exercised in secret, people afraid to tell the truth. And so to me, first of all, you know, whatever you call it, and this panel at some point also has to deal with accountability. This is something two-way. It is both listening and understanding in both directions. And the second is, you know, how do I make these people accountable? And at some point, we do want to address that as well. But to me, being open isn't simply posting your minutes. To be honest, when I read our minutes, I'm embarrassed. Like any legal minutes, they say almost nothing. And I think it is our duty, and it's, frankly, we've got to do it or we won't win anybody's trust, not just to post our minutes, but to explain what we did, what was our reasoning. And sometimes that means we have to trust you, because we need to explain, well, we did this because, you know, there are these two points of view and we're trying to find a balance between them. And sometimes we need to make explicit things that our lawyers would prefer for us to keep implicit. But at some point, I'd rather say these things. I'd rather ask Frank about his contract. I'd rather point out that there's tensions between the SOs and the rest of the community than simply try and hide it and pretend it's not there. So to me, transparency is not simply exposure, but explanation.
Let me suggest a radical idea to you. I'm a lawyer. Did I hear something? Up. Right this second. Go for it.
I've been quiet up until now. Chris Ambler, here on behalf of myself. You talk about trust, and you talk about trust being established, and you talk about openness, and this meeting's been very open going in. But I haven't seen much openness coming back. To establish trust, you have to have, as was said, good feelings over time. And we've had a very short time. And in that short time, we've already had very bad feelings.
What's your bad feeling?
Can I get some answers from the board about just how transparent your selection was? It was very opaque. And we've already got some bad feelings about that, and you're saying, well, we'll explain to you what we did and why we did it, and that will create trust. It's the other way around. You have to be trusted when you explain these things so we can say, okay, we trust that you made these decisions, and that's why, and they were good decisions. So where's the transparency in how you were selected?
So I heard the answer from Joe Sims. Now, it's like up to us to accept it or not. He basically said, these people were touched by Moses. They were selected by John Postel. Trust them, for starters.
No.
Take a shot. Okay, no. You don't trust them. All right. You'll have to do a few things. So far, we haven't done much of anything. That's what they're saying. Except having a meeting, which is as transparent as we can make
it. But when questions have been asked, the answer has been, well, we don't know yet. I haven't gotten any substance back. I have heard plenty of fantastic questions. And I've heard fantastic comments from all sides of this issue. But I haven't gotten anything back. I have no reason to trust at this point because none of the questions that I heard that were so good have been answered yet.
Now, wait a minute. You have reason to trust precisely for that reason. Because these people told you, for starters, that they're coming in pretty cold to this. They've got a long way to go before they figure out anything. And I hear everyone else saying, slow down, slow down. I don't see them rushing to answer your questions.
But when they were... when they're asked about their personal...
Let's give another one a chance. David Johnson.
I do represent Network Solutions, but I'm speaking on my own behalf. I think... if we look forward, one of the things the board can consider, even before it's had notice and comment periods and the formation of SOs, is to begin to initiate more concrete and specific studies of the mechanisms that will help to answer these problems of trust. One of them, the most fundamental in accountability terms, is how can we be sure that you will follow the bylaws? Representation by membership is not really enough to protect that. Fine words on paper are not necessarily enough to protect that. We need a, if we're going to have an authoritative set of texts that define your mission and limit your powers, we need an institutional mechanism to have the conversation about whether that is what is being done. Not because, even if we trust you in your own view to follow the bylaws, there may be different views about what the bylaws mean and what they ought to mean. And if someone feels that the bylaws have been violated in a way that harms them, then they need some way to assert their case. Should they go to the Attorney General of California? It's not clear that that scales on a global basis. Should they bring a lawsuit? That's a pretty expensive thing for all concerned. One other possibility that is contemplated by your own bylaws is the creation of a reconsideration process and the possibility of establishing a neutral party who can give a place for someone who is unhappy to go to make a record that's presided over by someone who is not the board, and to at least present the view of that neutral process to the board publicly, so that at least in embarrassment of going against such a judgment would be a factor in play.
Listen, it's like an argument, right? It's like it's a proposal that you're making.
Yes, right. I'm suggesting that the board,
so, you know, write it down and make it a good proposal.
I'd like to respond.
Please.
Unfortunately, this is for Chris. I can't promise anything on behalf of the board, and I don't have an answer to this. But I can say that as a member of the board, I think this is something we should think about. And I don't know what that means, whether it means how we design the reconsideration process. Some people would basically like to create another board that would be elected at large by who knows what membership, you know, some kind of, again, a balance of powers. Maybe there's an alternative dispute resolution process we could use. We're well aware that the major means right now is for somebody to go to court. But are they going to go to court in the United States or in France? Which laws apply where? And so this is a very important issue. There's the notion of fair hearing panels. It's something we will be considering. But we want to also look at the trade-offs of the costs of this in time and money and the value of it. Both of these are legitimate questions.
Just one quick, I think exactly the beginning of the process in which the concerned and somewhat untrusting community begins to work specifically on what those costs and delays and what the mechanisms might be is something that could begin right away.
Absolutely. Thank you, David.
Okay, this is Carl again back here. I'd like to engage in a mild trust-building exercise. There was various proposals from VWG and others that suggested that board votes, at least on significant matters, beyond the record, recorded, so that the membership actually had some material in which to exercise their franchise. Since that didn't end up in the currently adopted bylaws, I would just like to hear from the board members why they chose to elide that provision, that specific provision. I'd like to hear their opinions on this.
Greg?
Yes, I personally oppose the thought that a board publishes the voting records of its members. A board is a governance body for an organization, and it tries to achieve a degree of coherence so that it is making decisions on the, in the best interest of all of the constituency. You may have a director who is representative of a particular body who brings and advocates the point of view of that body, but in listening to the arguments on the board, decides that another course of action is in the best interests of the total constituency and votes accordingly. It's inappropriate for that to be then recorded, and his own particular constituency feels that he's not abiding by their rules, throwing him out. It's a board of a company, it's not a government. That's my view.
Could I ask for a rule of preference on the mic for people that are leaving at 4? Could people leaving at 4, you've got a privilege.
Okay, I'd just like to finish up. I'd like to know if any other members of the board had to comment on this provision, because it did take a majority vote to go one way or the other. And also answer the question of, if we don't know how the board voted, then how is the membership supposed to be a membership? How is it supposed to know what board members are doing?
Thank you. Mr. Sundown.
We can talk on the subject of conflict of interest. Is that correct? That's the appropriate time?
You may.
You may. There's a general flavor about the ICANN which has disturbed me all along. I think it needs to be brought out. The wording, the very first article or bylaw talks about charity. Well, that seems to be a misapplied word, and there's a whole kind of tenor that's gone on. And because this was defined as a non-profit organization, that idea seems to become confused with ideas of charity and money not passing hands. I think that's very disingenuous, hypocritical, actually, because we're talking about commercialization on the Internet, privatization, and the major trend on the Internet is commercialization. I believe that within a year or two, the ICANN will be taking in all the money it needs to operate, and perhaps more. I don't think financing the Central Internet Authority is going to be a problem. I want to bring up the question of why it has not been proposed to hire people to work for the ICANN, all the way from the board of directors down to technical officers. Hire people, pay them salaries, and therefore buy their allegiance to the ICANN, rather than continuing what seems to me like a hypocritical and false volunteer relationship with people on the board and the supporting organizations, et cetera. I don't believe that you can avoid a conflict of interest. If you depend on people's generosity and goodwill, you have to pay them a salary and get them to work for the ICANN. That's my feeling. And I haven't seen a rational explanation of what this whole charity, non-profit, no salary sort of nonsense is all about.
Well, the Berkman Center is contributing its services charitably. So.
Is that a reasonable long-term plan for the ICANN to have people working for charity? Could the board...
I'll take this very briefly because we're short of time. The staff are indeed paid. Mike is paid. The board members are not. Our expenses are reimbursed. As a board member, I would be happy to be paid, and maybe we should consider that.
Could we keep things to a minute now? Ben, could you give us that? Great. Professor Camp.
Yes, I'm Jean Camp from the Kennedy School of Government. You're not a board of directors in many ways. This is really about governance. And many of the arguments we're hearing are about what scope of government. Should you get paid? Should you have a big government with a big paid staff, or should you be a smaller government? It's about government. I believe that we're citizens of the Internet, and we're not all shareholders, and that you have duties greater than simply making the greatest return. However, I'd like to point out that the Internet has thrived very well with very little governance, and in fact, that has been one of the things that has allowed it to thrive. And so I have comments on the bylaws that tend to be rather dry about percentages, et cetera. But the essence is that it would be better to develop an organization which can do little and tends to gridlock at this point in time than it would be to develop an organization that is easily captured by small, powerful interests. And finally, that you are with the challenge now of building an organization that is difficult to mold by powerful interests, but that is flexible enough to grow with the needs of Internet governance. And I think I wish all of us luck in this endeavor.
Thank you. Mr. Rutkowski.
Charlie, you said that the board hasn't made any fundamental decisions yet. One of the most fundamental decisions it could have made, it did already, and that's concerning the subject of so-called two-letter country TLDs, and it declared that these are within the sovereign jurisdiction of countries, something that's a dramatic departure, and frankly, I think wrong in law. So the question is, what process did you use to make that decision? How did people vote? What information did you have before you? And are you going to consider undoing that declaration? Thank you.
Well, first of all, the board didn't make a decision to state to change the status quo. It was asked a question and it answered a question, and the response said, we will sustain the status quo. Now, Tony, if you want to have an argument on the record with us about you don't believe what I just said, then we'll certainly get together with counsel offline and talk about it. But the board had no intention and hasn't changed the status quo with regard to the provisions that John put in place to handle that issue. It is widely thought that those processes need review and updating, and so they will undoubtedly come to us for exactly that reason.
Hey. Jason Ello, Iperdome. This morning we talked about membership, and this afternoon we're talking about fair, open, and transparent processes. But in actuality, the goal is how to make this board accountable to the internet community. To be accountable, whoever you're accountable to has to have the power not only to appoint you, but to remove you. In order to do that with knowledge, we have to know how you voted for things and why you make the decisions that you make. For these reasons, meeting minutes 21 days after the fact is not appropriate. It's not sufficient. Transcripts are better. In fact, webcasting is better still. All of these concepts were discussed with these board members, 10 out of 11 of you, yet these concepts were not incorporated in your bylaws that you tried to rush through the U.S. government. The question is why? This is a perfect example of why these concepts are important. If you have rational reasons for your decisions, you should make them available to the internet community so we can support you in those decisions. So we still don't know what the details of those minutes are. We don't know the details of why you made your decisions. So I'd like to summarize in the words of Ronald Reagan, and I can't say it in Russian, but maybe Esther can. Trust, but verify.
We did, in fact, say, Greg said, I think, that we did indeed consider those things, and we don't think that they lead to effective decision-making. There are checks and balances in here.
Okay, I think you can get it up. Well, may I interpret the question and see if I can elicit something more from it from the board? The question is, how comfortable are you actually operating in the open? And it can be carried through not just to a question of corporate minutes and corporate meetings, but to your full role as a director of the corporation. In a sense, openness is part of the art of living in some way. So, for example, I find that my email is a key part of the actual transactional world that I'm now in. And I feel that I can, if you're doing the job, is doing something historic. So the question would be, at what point does your email get archived and come public? At what point do we see the thought process that actually goes into whatever that screen is that requires just enough delay to be practical? And how fully does the screen come down?
I don't know, we just talked about that.
Who wants to answer?
Well, I can try to answer it, at least in part. I do not agree that the board up to now even hasn't been transparent, because if only basic decision the board took was the adoption of the bylaws, and you will find both in the letter to Becky Bird and in the letter accompanying it by S. Dyson, you'll find the reasoning of our decisions and the reasoning behind the decision we took after the discussions, at least with BWG and the ORSC. If you would insist on full transparency, which to me then would mean that every board meeting would have to be webcasted, what you elicit there is secretive meetings. Why? Because a decision-making process cannot be done in full public. The United States government does not.
Please stand.
meet in public. They do not. The executive meetings are not made public. At least, but then my reference is a European reference. And our cabinet meetings are by far not public. The cabinet meetings, even the minutes, are not made public. The government reports on the results and explains and reasons the results. And I believe that's what counts. Because the board is a body. The board is not a collection of individuals. And what you, at least with this board, have to reckon with is that we came from many different directions, from many regions in the world even, and even amongst ourselves. We have to have a learning process to come to fully reasoned and reasonable decisions. So,
but Hans,
as I said before,
Hans,
you're asking for the new clothes of the emperor, which is running naked.
But Hans, isn't it just possible that the learning process is exactly a process of learning to live more in the open?
I think the movement in this would be two ways. I believe that the working of the board will be more transparent than it has been up to today. But on the other hand, I believe that from the side, at least of parts of what I'm listening today, is that they have to accept that a number of discussions for the board as a body will not have to be public. There is no need to be to watch every word you say. Because if you're speaking public, you have to think about every word. You have to think about aspects of privacy. Because in discussing personal issues or things concerning persons, you cannot be fully public.
Let's go with the questions. We've only got a few more minutes left, let's really keep it to a minute. Go.
Michael Nelson with IBM. I bring a little bit of a different perspective here. I spent 10 years working in government, working with organizations that are required to function under some very strict rules on transparency and openness. Many of the proposals here regarding this have been inspired by laws that the federal government applies. I think we really have to think seriously about the costs of some of the proposals that have been made. As Esther said, you don't get this for free. If you talk seriously about webcasting board meetings, you have to understand what that means. As Hans said, that would mean that all the real decisions would be made offline, some other place, some other time. People who are proposing these mechanisms for transparency have the burden on them to justify these mechanisms. The real answer here is to have a board that produces products, proposals, and decisions that they can explain, that they can justify. We don't need to come up with elaborate mechanisms that have never been tried before in similar settings to answer this question. And as I say, people who come up with these proposals for transparency should show us where they've worked before, give us models. You know, show me where the Red Cross, where Amtrak, or the post office have to live like this.
Thank you. Next on the back, Mike.
I have a few items that directly, I'm sorry, Patrick Greenwell, Internet Service Providers Consortium. I have a few items that are related to the bylaws, but I'd like to take a moment to answer the gentleman's question from IBM. As a board member of the Internet Service Providers Consortium, we have two sessions. We have a general session during the meeting, and we have an executive session. Executive sessions are for discussion of personnel matters only. That is the only time that we are a closed board. Any other time, we are completely open to membership attending the meetings, and we have found that it works very well. Now, onto the issues with the current bylaws as proposed to NTIA. Current bylaws still allow the board not disclose any information that at its sole discretion does not feel fit for public distribution. That is a problem. I can understand and appreciate that you would not want to do that for personnel issues, but there is no excuse for not doing that for anything else.
Could we just limit you to one point? I mean, you made a great point, but we got lots of other people in the line.
Certainly.
Go ahead, front, David. Or excuse me, Michael.
Mitchell.
Mitchell.
I think the challenge for this organization isn't achieving transparency. The challenge for this organization is going to be achieve opacity. Because of your location at the nexus of the internet, everything you do is going to be examined in far more detail than almost any nonprofit or for-profit organization that has ever existed before. And I think what we've seen here is that transparency reveals the ambiguity of your decision-making process. Ambiguity is interpreted by people here as obfuscation, and obfuscation is opacity. It's a paradox, and I don't know the way out of it. We're going to have to figure that part out ourselves, I guess.
I think it's trust. Background.
Jay Halvin. I think there are two real strong important questions on the table. One is how to keep scaling the internet so that we can achieve truly universal access to communication for everybody in the world. And I think the second question is how we can scale the administration of the internet so it involves the governments of more than just the United States. I think we have an example here of the questions just raised about transparency of why the government of the U.S. may be, or the executive of the U.S. may be passing this on. They don't want that kind of transparency. But it's the government bodies that deserve and should have that transparency, not you people. You should leave this to the U.S. government, who deserves that transparency, and they should carry on in bringing this to the rest of the world by opening up and sharing the administration of it with other countries.
Thanks. Front Mike.
Hi, Ivan Pope, NetNames and various other things. I've been closely involved with this process and at meetings like this for the last 2.5 years or so. I just want to say there's a sort of endless stream of criticism of anybody who gets up the front and tries to move things on, and I've been involved in that process in the past. This is not the government of the internet. This is not an organization. This is not a board that's going to run everything forever. And the people in this room are not representative. These are people who've walked into the room. There's a lot of absolute belief from individuals that they know the exact answer, yet I've never heard the solutions actually expounded. I would like to say, I think this board, with all its undoubted faults and problems, is probably about as believable and neutral as we're going to get. Remember, these are people who have not been involved in this argument before, and we've been waiting for that for a hell of a long time. So let's just get behind it and get things moving. I think what the whole community here really wants is some movement, some settlement of some questions, so we can all get on with the things we're really supposed to do, which is not get in rooms like this and argue about nitpicking little points, but to get on with building the things we're concerned with in the real outside world. Thank you.
Nick Lordi with Belcor, but I'm here on my own accord. There's too much distrust. Europeans don't trust the U.S. The U.S. don't trust the Europeans. Latin America's chimed in. I can't you consider as having a fundamental principle, the establishment of trust. I also view ICANN as the Internet's IPO. And as one of the millions of investors in the Internet and in this IPO, I would like to buy stock in ICANN. But I can't do that yet because I don't see an S-1. I don't see a business plan. Until we get a business plan out, one which clearly articulates the goals, mission, staffing and operations plan, legal sensitivity analysis, and financial projections for 3 years for ICANN, we cannot put trust into ICANN or make any decisions onto a lot of the issues that were brought up today. So I'd like to see a business plan. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll, he makes a great point.
Let's just freeze the lines at this point because we're right running up to time. Yes.
Yeah. Rich Foreman, Register.com. I think that I'd like to make a proposal on a way that the board can operate, as Hans mentioned, in some degree of privacy so that decisions can be made, but also release their findings afterwards. And that's very similar to the way the Supreme Court operates, which is their discussions occur in private and their deliberations occur in private. But once a decision has been reached, the public understands who voted for what and the basis for their decision, so that there is dissension. The public gets to know what each board member's thoughts are, and so that the public gets a better understanding which board members they want to support and which board members they don't want to support, but that the board can still operate in its own, not secret, but in a more less formal and more relaxed manner so that better decisions can be made. The other thing that I wanted to...
One to a customer. How about that?
Okay.
But, yeah, right. Good. Thanks. Javier.
Okay. Javier Sola from the European Internet Business Association. On the subject of accountability, we believe that there should be enough information to know why decisions have been made. But we agree with the board members who have spoken that you don't need the smaller details. You just need to know why decisions are made. And the other very short point is that there's a lot of trust for this board, for why they were elected, in a very large part of the internet community, who's here or is not here today. We have heard a number of voices of untrust. But I think the number of voices that trust this board and are willing to give them an opportunity is very large. And that we expect the U.S. government to accept it as soon as possible so that they can actually start working and run the internet. That's what we need now.
Thank you. Mr. Dixon.
Yeah, Jim Dixon for Euro-Espanisco UK again. The purposes of ICANN were very carefully spelled out in the articles. They are actually very narrow. There are management of internet protocols, IP address space, the DNS, and operation of the root name servers. There's a real problem in this whole process for me, in that on the one hand, it's so ill-focused and has so little to do with the fundamental purposes of ICANN. And on the other hand, I can't see that this board, as constituted, I'm sorry to say this, can be trusted with the management of these resources. I have asked a number of people if they would trust the ICANN board with the operation of the root name servers. Everybody has said no. And this is a real problem.
But why is that a problem once the corporation is fully formed with the standing organizations represented so that you have basically the Senate of stakeholders there who are steeped in the technology?
You're asking for a great deal of trust. You're saying, well, once we get way down the road and things are okay, well, things will be okay, you say. But we're not down there. At this point, should the root name servers be taken away from NSI and turned over to ICANN's management? I can't. I couldn't go for that. I don't know anybody else who could.
Hi, it's me, Carl Arbeck again. I don't care what you call it, governance or management or whatever, but it is control of a fairly small section of the internet, and I will choose to call it governance, as it is definitely not business, for-profit business as usual. Now, governance is expensive, and we just talked about webcasting. I'll hold up my credit card here, and I will offer to buy the equipment to put the board meetings onto the M-Bone.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Carl. Enough. Rhonda, somehow it's fitting that you get the last word.
Yeah.
And I guess it all seems backwards, because what I would trust is where there was the work to find a prototype of an online process where people would discuss the issues, the board would see the discussion, and would be part of that discussion, and then the decisions would grow out of that discussion, not that some board off somewhere else goes and makes a set of decisions. So the internet way is the unique way, in fact, the way that needed to be dealt with here, and that's what my proposal was towards, and I haven't heard anybody on the board have any understanding of the internet, that it's not decisions by you, but it's your participation in our community that is the only thing that will make you trustworthy. And I don't see that you have any understanding of that, and I don't see how you can have an understanding at this point. And I guess the whole internet community hopefully will either teach you that or find a way to get rid of you, but really that's the way of the internet. And this is very different from anything I've heard at any of the meeting today.
Sort of like you're the voice and they're the mouth.
That by them being part of our process, they help to figure it out and contribute to it, and it gets figured out by the community, not by them.
Thank you. Thank you. Esther, I turn it back to you.
Okay.
a lot of people have to leave. Those of you who stay, we welcome the opportunity to talk with you further. In some sense, yes, all you can do now is trust us or walk away. We hope after 4 months or 5 months, you'll be able to trust us on the basis of decisions we have made and explained. This is only the first of many meetings, maybe not such meetings, maybe some of them will be smaller and more productive and more focused, but this is only the first of many opportunities you will have to talk to us and we will have to talk to you. We hope we will have more answers, but we need to sit and think about what you told us. We learned a lot. And, you know, I'd love for the other board members to talk, but we also need to get those of you out who want to go out. So I ask this with some trepidation, but let me say it this way. How many of you are glad you came? What? Okay, well, thank you very much. Thanks the board, thanks Berkman. Thanks.
Molly, no. Is your father Doug?
No.
Father-in-law.
Oh, okay. You're leaving?
Tell him I said hi. We don't know each other well, but IBM days, NSF days, all that. He was something, or is something, but I mean, I remember some of the interactions we had over NSF.
Yeah.
So you married his son. Okay. Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Good. Did you go to the University of Michigan?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great school. Gee. Yeah, that's Molly. Thank you for your participation today. Appreciate it. No, I'm not. Some are. No, not in Boston. Right. Hello, Tom.
How are you?
Yeah.
I'm
here. Fine.
My own. Not from the iPhone.
Just
you start
just don't answer. I know. I know. Well, you know, I only came to that organization in 94, and I wasn't very articulate about the point I was trying to make, but by hanging around, as I did as their leader, but hanging around to these people who were there at the beginning, and there are a good number of them still. Yeah, right, good. Yeah, I couldn't make it that time. Right, right. Yeah, and Paul Gadonis, he's from my position there when I left. Yeah, just hanging out with those people gave me a whole sense of history, and of course, have you read The Origins of the Internet or Wizards? That is one of the best descriptions, because all the founders, including those not BBS, but all the ones who were really active at the beginning, all gave her their views of this, and they all agreed that her book is a good representation of what they were thinking and how they felt. I think that's very exciting to read that, because of course none of them predicted personal computers being part of it. Yeah.
It will all be gone.
Exactly. It did. You know, that's Tim Berners-Lee who's just down the street here.
By the way, that's why...
Yeah, he's great. He's great. I think he's going to get a Nobel. Wow. Oh, I didn't hear that. I got to catch up with that.
I'm glad you feel that way. Because
where he's doing, where the thought is that there's ways to look at all this traffic and do maybe predictive or analytical. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to give you my car ticket or the other cars, but there's my thing. Yeah, please talk.
I really delighted to write to do some recommendations.
Oh, you're with Alex.
My experience in the community. Because usually the community forward the traditional.
Do you work with BBN at all? Well, BBN Technologies has a whole learning unit. Just learning unit. The guys who have, they've done a lot for years for the military. They are looking for ways to kind of commercialize themselves. At the minimum, work with commercial companies on contracts or things. Peter Pussy.
We must make constitutions.
There.
Cultural systems. For this, it's also to attach to the way of
you're right here, Kate.
Seems to me that some of what we intend to do
up 128 is up. Right, that's the internet service side. That's really what I came to be and what we started was to commercialize the think tank. Or you can call it. If you call that 800 number, this is a speech recognition deal. You can listen to it. You hit two. And then when you say name, please, beep. After that beep, just say Peter Huston. He's the head of professional service in which this group is. Yeah, their technology, their consulting expertise, whatever. They work inside GTE, for example, helping them, and they've worked on contracts with companies to set up distance learning. They would love that. Then I think there's a synergy.
We haven't taken any votes.
Yeah, you bet. They also like the aspect of just